WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And as the politics around a border wall and immigration generally head to a dramatic standoff this week on Capitol Hill, last week we were reminded of the daily consequences of our border policy. 7-year-old Jacqueline Cal, sometimes called Jacqueline Cal McKean, died in U.S. custody within days of crossing the southern border into New Mexico from her home in Guatemala. The Washington Post reported that she suffered from dehydration, plus a lack of food and medical attention. You've heard something, at least, about her story. The child's death is a tragic reminder of the treacherous journey that migrants, especially migrant children, endure to set foot on U.S. soil. It is also pulling our attention to the care they receive once they come in contact with border officials in the cases in which they do. Jacqueline was one of 15,000 migrant children being housed in government shelters after crossing the U.S. border in recent times. My next guest, Fernanda Santos, has reported extensively from border states like Arizona and New Mexico and written a number of stories about the conditions inside holding areas at Border Patrol stations and the plight of children specifically. She is a former New York Times correspondent and is currently professor of journalism at Arizona State University. Fernanda, thank you for coming back on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. It's great to be back.
So by way of background, I know you have reported from the exact area where Jacqueline crossed the border, a very remote place in the southwest corner of New Mexico. What's it like there?
It is. Let me just say that when we talk about the border, a lot of people think it's all one thing. It's all very similar, very much the same, and it's not. When you talk about the Tijuana border with California, for example, a San Diego area in California, it's a very urban area. You're bound to find someone when you get to the other side. You're actually always, most likely always in contact with somebody or within sight of somebody. This part of New Mexico, known as the boot heel, if you look at the map of the United States, it does look like the heel of a boot jutting into Mexico, is I would say the most remote part of the border that I have ever been to. And I've been to a lot of the border, if, you know, most of it, I guess, during my time here in the Southwest. When you cross from New Mexico, from Mexico into New Mexico, the closest city or the closest urban center is an hour to an hour and a half away by car. There are no homes in the area that you might bump into. You might see a rancher or a Border Patrol agent driving by, but you may not see anyone for hours or miles and miles and miles. It is desert, so there's not a lot of shade. It's hot during the day, even during this time of the year, and very cold at night, so the extreme of temperature is there. So if for people who spend more than one day crossing, they are exposed to the very big variations in temperature, and there is no water. Many times migrants who are lost or who have run out of water, they end up drinking the water that's left there for cattle, which is obviously not the type of water that any human being would yeah. have to drink.
We've heard lots of border-related migrant horror stories, of course, but not this exactly. A 7-year-old who actually died reportedly from dehydration. How much is young Jacqueline's story familiar to you or unique?
You know, obviously, the fact that she died is makes her story stand out. But many, many children, many adults also over years since the enforcement in California became so strong in the 90s have been pushed to cross the desert into the United States through Arizona, primarily, where the crossing is very harsh, exactly because of the areas in which there is nobody around. So if you need help, you're unlikely to bump into someone who can help you. And in fact, this area in New Mexico, Border Patrol agents that I met when I was there told me that many migrants end up there because they get lost or they are crossing with the help of cartels who know that area well. It's a very difficult area because of the mountains that it has. So because of that, thousands of people have died in the desert. The remains of more than 2,000 people have been found, and there are groups that try to identify them. They die from some of the same things that Jacqueline experienced, dehydration, shock, except that they die in the desert and they stay there. Of course, their bodies get decomposed. Many times all that's left are the bones. Children, when they cross, when they are able to reach a Border Patrol agent or a Customs and Border Protection agent at a port of entry, they are taken to shelters. Now we know that a lot of these places are temporary. They are overcrowded. In Tornillo, recently in Texas, one of these shelters, Congressman O'Rourke and others were saying that it was like a prison where they're holding these children, awaiting to reunite with a relative that's in the United States. It's the conditions are far from ideal. I remember some years ago, I was in Nogales, Arizona, at a warehouse where the Border Patrol had hundreds of children at another wave, as they say, of unaccompanied minors coming into the country, and it was one of the most heartbreaking sights as a mother, as a journalist, as a human being, to see children shoulder to shoulder on these thermal blankets, lying on the floor and just waiting for. For help and not knowing where they are, when they're going to get help, and when they're going to reunite with somebody they love. So it's not death is the most extreme, but the trauma experienced by these children and adults, I would argue, is severe, and it happens every day and has been happening for quite some time.
We're talking to Fernanda Santos, former New York Times correspondent, now a professor of journalism at Arizona State University, who's been looking closely at the death of 7-year-old Jacqueline Cal, or if you construct her name with her mother's name, as they sometimes do, Jacqueline Cal Makin. And we can take some phone calls for her at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Fernanda, I want to get into the dispute, which is only growing between Jacqueline's family and the Border Patrol and the Trump administration generally, about how much to blame the government for her death. They say that she was already dehydrated to a life-threatening degree and had apparently not eaten for days, they say. The girl's family, of course, wants an investigation. Here's Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen.
You know, this is just a very sad example of the dangers of this journey. This family chose to cross illegally. What happened here was they were 90 miles away from where we could process them. They came in such a large crowd that it took our Border Patrol folks a couple times to get them all. We gave immediate care. We'll continue to look into the situation. But again, I cannot stress how dangerous this journey is when migrants choose to come here illegally.
Kirstjen Nielsen, Homeland Security Secretary on Fox and Friends on Friday. And here's one more. Trump immigration policy advisor Stephen Miller yesterday on CBS Face the Nation.
Our hearts break for the tragic death of the 7-year-old girl. The loss of that precious life is horrifying. It is a painful reminder of the ongoing humanitarian tragedy that is illegal immigration and the misery that it spreads. A coyote dropped off 163 migrants in an extremely remote section of New Mexico. Those individuals were found by Border Patrol, who, many cases, act as first responders. In fact, Border Patrol saves about 4,000 lives every single year. Unfortunately, hundreds die on the dangerous trek up. smuggling organizations profit off death and misery. They are vicious, vile organizations.
Stephen Miller on Face the Nation. So their position is clear. Fernanda, how much of that would you like to fact check just to start out?
Well, first of all, when we talk about illegal immigration and people who would be making a claim of asylum in this country, we have to think, why is it that they are crossing not through the ports of entry? Why are they not approaching a Customs and Border Protection agent at an official border crossing and petitioning for asylum there and going through these treacherous routes to try to get to the United States, to try to come into the country and then petition for asylum here? And the reason is exactly that we now have a policy from the federal government that forces these people to stop in Mexico if they are coming through a port of entry and wait there to ask for asylum. The ports of entry are overloaded. They can no longer handle the number of people who are coming. And part of the reason is because the administration knew there was a large number of people coming and chose not to prepare for that. Instead, chose a more sort of militaristic approach, right? We have we had until very recently, actually, we still have some army along the border. We have the military presence along the border. We've had for quite some time a large number of Border Patrol agents patrolling parts of the border that for a long time were destination for illegal migrant crossings, but that more recent, much in recent years, are a destination for people who would like for this country to help them overcome the dangers that they are facing for their lives in the countries they come from. Central America, many of the situations they face were, some argue, caused by policies that this country adopted in the 80s during the civil wars there. So, there's a little bit of background that's necessary to the statements that Miller and Nielsen had so that people understand that it's not like one day these people woke up in Guatemala and decided to take this journey here because they didn't like their lives there. There's a lot more behind, and there's a reason why more and more migrants are trying to cross through these dangerous illegal, these dangerous routes as opposed to going through the legal process of going to a port of entry. They're not welcome there. They're told to wait. They're told to come back. And many of them are so desperate that they can't wait and come back.
Is it accurate, as far as you understand, that a coyote, quote unquote, dropped off 163 migrants in an extremely remote section, that particular extreme remote section of New Mexico we were talking about? But that's what Stephen Miller said in that clip, that Jacqueline was one of 163 who were found by Border Patrol, who in many cases act as first responders. And he said Border Patrol saves about 4,000 lives every year, but unfortunately hundreds die on the dangerous trek up.
And what he said there, I don't know about this specific case, whether or not it was a coyote who dropped them off at this very remote location. The family was interviewed. I was watching an interview that they gave in Guatemala by Telemundo, and they did say that they hope the father will be allowed to stay in the United States so that he can work and pay back the debt that they have now with the coyote who brought them here. So those two things seem to align. It is true that drug cartels and coyotes, they work hand in hand these days. There was a time maybe 20 years ago when you could hire some young man in Mexico who knew the way to the United States and pay him a few hundred dollars and he would take you. But these days, for anyone to cross from Mexico into the U.S., they need permission or they need to be let through by the drug cartels that control these routes and now control not only the drug smuggling operations, but also the human smuggling operations. That's the reason why many people who want to cross are forced to carry backpacks with 40 pounds of marijuana in their backpacks, because that's the only way the cartel will allow them to cross. It's either that or paying thousands of dollars that they don't have. So that's one aspect of it. It is also true that Border Patrol agents are the first responders. They are the ones working, patrolling a very remote area. That's their job to patrol that part of this part of the country. And so they are likely to be the first ones in terms of law enforcement agencies to come across a migrant who's has just crossed the border through outside a port of entry, in between the ports of entry. And they also respond to there are signals that you can American press in the desert to call an agent, distress signals that are placed throughout the desert so that people who need water or who are sick and can't walk anymore can call for an agent, and then the agent will go to that place and help you out. But of course, the job of the agent is to help you out, hopefully make you healthy enough, but then bring you to a Border Patrol station and then begin the processing of deportation for that person. And that's where another issue begins, because these stations are not meant to be holding people overnight. There's a lawsuit here in Arizona that was filed by migrants who were held for days in these stations under subhuman conditions, according to the ACLU and the plaintiffs in the lawsuit. And that creates all other sort of problems. The issue of the border has many, many layers that over the years by Democratic and Republican administrations have been ignored or not addressed properly, or only addressed with one aspect but not the other, and they can't be treated that way. There has to be a look that's not just military, that's not just on the enforcement security side, but there has to be an element of humanitarian aid as well involved. And as long as we only look at one or the other, I think that we're always going to have major problems there. And there's no sign that things are going to get better anytime soon.
Josh in Westchester, you're on WNYC with Fernanda Santos, former New York Times correspondent, now journalism professor at Arizona State. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Brian. Kind of a multi-part question. So in these remote areas of New Mexico, what is the border characteristic? Is it a wall? Is it a barbed wire fence? Is it just a sign or water? And then once the migrants come across, is their preference to get picked up by border so they can claim asylum? And if it is and they don't get picked up and they just stumble into some little town somewhere, what happens when they get to this little town? Does somebody take them in? Do they hope to be found by someone? You know, what's going on there?
These are all great questions. So the first part of the question, the border in the boot heel is mostly barbed wire. There's no fence as you would find, say, if you've seen pictures or been to Tijuana or Nogales, Arizona, or El Paso in Texas. You will find the fence there, the big, tall steel posts. That's not what you see in New Mexico. It's a barbed wire. I remember being there, actually, at the end of the day, I was with Border Patrol, and it was dark, and we were right along this barbed wire fence, surrounded by a pack of coyotes. They come out at night. They don't attack. And I felt very safe because I was surrounded with men, by men with guns as well. So, you know, if it was necessary for protection, I had the agents with me. And on the other side in Mexico, a truck came out of nowhere, a pickup truck, driving right along the barbed wire fence. And you could see lights all the way out in Mexico. And I thought, why is this truck here? And the agent said, you know, it's a lot of times it's spotters for the cartels who are driving by to see where we are and then figuring out where to, at which place, which spot to go through the barbed wire fence and cross with drugs. So it's very easy to cross in this area. But it's also a choice to go through there is a choice of desperation or of really not wanting to be found, which is obviously the case with drug cartels. Now, the second part, once people cross in these very remote areas, such as the one I just described, it is, if you are someone who came to this country with the intention of filing a claim of asylum, you came from a country in Central America where you're being threatened by gangs, you've had people already killed by gangs or other criminal organizations that many times charge fees of small business owners that the business owners cannot pay, or want to take somebody's young daughter to be the quote-unquote girlfriend of the crime boss in town. If you have the intention of claiming for asylum when you get here, then you do want to be found, whether it be by the Border Patrol agent that you come across right as you cross the border, or if you happen to find a home and you need water or need food, you want someone to call the authorities to go pick you up there. Now, if you don't have that possibility of claiming for asylum, because there are criteria you have to meet, very strict criteria, But you want to come here to pursue a better life because you left extreme poverty, because you left situations that you felt could not be fixed where you were, then there is a chance that these people will try to evade authority and then settle somewhere here and start a life in this country.
Josh, thank you for those questions. Maya in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Maya.
Hello?
Hi, Maya, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Wilma.
Oh, I'm sorry, then. I was giving you a wrong name. Wilma, hello. I apologize. Hello, Wilma.
Hi. I'm Wilma, and I live in New York City, and I have volunteered many times at a detention center in Texas. It's called the Baby Jail. And listening to this interview, it's just like giving me chills because I heard so many times the stories of these women and even the children talking about the awful, awful situation that they are put in when they get into the United States. They're sent to a place called Hielera with the icebox and the kennel called Perrera. And when you cross the borders, many of these people are wet because they cross the river. And when they put in this place called the icebox, they cold, freezing cold temperatures. And you can just imagine being hungry, wet, desperate, with trauma, and you being put in a place that is awfully cold. And sometimes these kids, most of the time these kids, I heard about, you know, kids where they're bleeding from their lips because they dehydrated and they get blisters. And the parents are separated there. The kids are put in one room, and the parents are put in somewhere else. And you imagine being sick, not even, you know, able to get medicine, but at the same time separated from the person that cares for you and they love you the most. I think that's criminal, and I think that's wrong. And as a society, we really need to change that. I'm going back to volunteer there because for me, it is important that there is not another Jacqueline, that there is not another kid that loses, you know, her life because they're trying to get a better life and they're trying to escape from awful situation from their country. I believe that this country has to work hard and make things better for their people. But in the meantime, we cannot let them die. We need to do something. And there is due process in this country. We can allow Donald Trump to really break the law by not providing these people what they need, which is a due process.
Thank you so much, Wilma. Fernanda, do you want, excuse me, do you want to talk to Wilma?
I've heard many stories by people like Wilma who volunteered in these jails, who worked in these jails as in these detention centers, they call them, as social workers or teachers. The interesting thing to remember is, as was mentioned at the top of our segment, Brian, is that in this week, by Friday, if there is no agreement on a budget in Washington, President Trump has said that he will shut down the government if he doesn't get funding approved for the border wall. So we are now at a point where the president is saying no money for the wall, no, the government will stop functioning. But there are needs to deal with the situation at hand that obviously costs money. There is a clear need for improvement in the facilities where we hold these children. Walmarts turned into makeshift detention centers are not ideal places. In Texas, as Wilma mentioned, many people cross the Rio Grande to get to the United States, and they are wet. In Arizona, there is no river. In New Mexico, there isn't a river either. But they do cross deserts, and they have other types of dangers that they face and medical situations that they might encounter along the way. So to me, the important thing to remember is this sort of interesting moment in time we're living, where we are here discussing the death of a 7-year-old who presumably was coming with her father, who was going to petition for asylum in this country and was forced to go through a route in between the ports of entry and faced dangers that led to her death. And at the same time, in Washington, a discussion of a budget that, if it does not include money for the border wall, the president is saying that he will shut down the government because that's what he wants, and he will have no other deal that doesn't include it. So it's just it shows how distant we are from actually finding a middle ground that moves towards some kind of solution, for lack of a better word, to the situation that we're faced with these days.
And unfortunately, that conversation continues, and it will do nothing to bring back 7-year-old Jacqueline Cal, who died in U.S. custody within days of crossing the southern border into New Mexico from her home in Guatemala last week. Fernanda Santos, former New York Times correspondent, now a journalism professor at Arizona State University, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay tuned.